So our next presenter is Tiffany Phelps. She's a health communicator for P3S Corporation working at CDC in the Division of Global Migration and Quarantine, where she focuses on strengthening and developing new partnerships and professional associations with government agencies and public and private organizations around non-pharmaceutical interventions. Before joining CDC, she was a program consultant with the Georgia Department of Community Health, where she provided guidance, technical assistance, and training to state grantees on adolescent health. Tiffany received her master's in public health and policy and management from Emory University. So come on down, Tiffany.
Good evening, everyone. Again, my name is Tiffany Phelps, and I'll be sharing with you findings from CDC's assessment of the communication needs for K-12 schools regarding 2009 pandemic influenza H1N1. Before I begin, I would like to thank the co-authors of this presentation, as shown here on the slide. I'd also like to disclose that I have no conflict of interest relevant to this presentation. So as my colleague Stacey Hoffman mentioned, the CDC developed guidance and a communication toolkit specifically for K-12 schools. Targeting this particular audience was important because unlike seasonal influenza, H1N1 influenza had a greater severity among school-aged children and even young adults. We also know that schools serve as a primary source for the ongoing transmission of various germs and some viruses. So, during the summer months, the CDC set out to develop and post pandemic influenza guidance to really help state and local public health officials and school administrators plan and prepare for the 2009-2010 academic school year. Our messages and materials targeted four school audiences: administrators, nurses, teachers, and parents. And again, here is the cover of the toolkit. Okay. And again, because materials had to be developed quickly and with little feedback from these four audiences, the CDC wanted to conduct a formative evaluation to really assess the awareness and understanding that audiences had with our materials, also talk about their challenges and barriers in implementing our recommendations. We wanted to identify the information needs as well as their preferred communication sources and channels. Okay. For this evaluation, we used two methods to capture feedback from opinion leaders, which I will define shortly, as well as our four audiences. First, we conducted a conference call with 14 leaders from 9 national organizations, and we defined opinion leaders as those individuals that represented organizations tasked with governing and even disseminating information to K-12 schools. And if you take a look under the participants column, you'll see that leaders were from organizations that supported state boards of education, school administration, curriculum development, and even health services. Second, we conducted 12 camera-assisted web-based focus groups with 56 participants, and I won't go into detail about the focus groups because Stacey has already done a great job of that, but I will say that we conducted 3 focus groups with each of the four audiences. And again, if you turn to the participant column, the last box, you'll see the number of participants for each audience group. So 15 for administrators, 13 for nurses, and 14 for parents and teachers. And this next slide, you can see the kinds of schools, the diversity among the kinds of schools that were represented in our sample. We wanted to really recruit a very diverse mix of participants, and I think we achieved that. School professionals and parents represented students from public, private, and charter schools located in urban, rural, and suburban settings. They also served predominantly African-American student populations, some predominantly Hispanic populations, as well as predominantly Caucasian. You can also see that there was diversity among the grade levels, and the majority of the schools that were represented in our sample served a mix of grade levels. For example, elementary and middle school students, middle school and high school students, or the entire range, so elementary through high school students. So as you can see, engaging community partners and even the four audiences was an essential part of this evaluation, and we captured some meaningful feedback. As you've heard, participants trusted the CDC and viewed them as a credible source for information. However, few participants were aware of CDC's H1N1 homepage, specifically for K-12 schools, and many of them had received bits and pieces of our materials either from their partners, a school administrator, and even their colleagues. There are also several key terms and concepts that participants did not quite understand. Again, increased severity. Many of them consistently confused recommendations for increased severity with those for current severity. And because of this confusion and with the changing guidance, administrators talked about their difficulties with determining when to dismiss schools early, when to close schools, and when to cancel student-related activities. Teachers and parents also struggled with understanding the term routine cleaning, specifically how often to clean and for how long they should continue cleaning. And in some of our parent discussions, many of them questioned why schools did not close just for routine cleaning and sanitation. All of the participants misunderstood the recommended length of time a person should stay home once they became ill. And some thought that it was for 24 hours after being fever-free. Some thought that it was for 5 and even up to 7 days. Again, you can see that there was some confusion between the two sets of recommendations that Stacy talked about. And then again, you see social distancing. Many of the school nurses and teachers did not feel that people would understand what that term meant. And they also wanted social distancing to include information specific to students. For example, warning against the dangers of sharing their personal items such as food and even drinks. And then lastly, parents struggled to identify or make the distinction between signs and symptoms for seasonal flu with those for H1N1. Because they were so similar, and they also did not understand which signs to look for that would require them to seek immediate medical attention. There were also several terms and concepts that participants struggled to implement. For example, the stay at home when sick recommendation. I guess I need to move on. Okay. administrators struggled to implement the stay at home when sick recommendation because staff and students continued to come to work when they were ill. For students, many of them just did not want to fall behind in their schoolwork, and some of them surprisingly did not want to jeopardize their perfect attendance awards. Go figure. And for staff, many of them talked about the hassles with having to develop lesson plans for substitute teachers and not having adequate sick leave to stay home for several days. And this is important because it was also echoed in our parent groups. Many of them just did not have time to take off several days at a time to care for a sick child. And then again, here you see school dismissals. Administrators struggled with implementing school dismissal and closure. One, because it was very disruptive to the educational process and also to the delivery of social services that many students count on and can only get through their schools. It also negatively impacts their school daily average attendance as well as student performance scores, which are both measures used in determining a school's funding. School administrators and school nurses talked about their struggles with linking staff, students, and even parents with available H1N1 vaccine. Specifically, school nurses talked about organizing and coordinating school-based vaccination clinics, but then having to cancel them because of the limited supply of H1N1 vaccine. Social distancing, again, was also a problem. Administrators really felt like schools just did not have enough space to really separate desks further apart or even designate an area in their school for staff and students who became ill during the school day. They also talked about issues with disadvantaged schools and how this particular recommendation, social distancing, affected disadvantaged schools. You know, them not being able to have the resources or access to technology in order to implement a distance learning program, and also the students not being able to participate in such a program because they also have limited access. They also talked about the resources and the lack of funding that disadvantaged schools have and providing staff and students with hand hygiene and respiratory supplies, for example, hand sanitizers and tissues. So as you can see, and as you're probably thinking, wow, schools have a lot of different needs, and I just want to quickly highlight some of the more frequently discussed needs that they have. In terms of guidance, administrators talked about the need for guidance that focused on school closures, also dismissing school early, as well as when to cancel student activities. They also need specific guidance on how to develop pandemic plans and who should be involved in that process. School nurses talked about the need for information geared towards medically fragile students, as well as high-risk populations. And lastly, student administrators talked about the need for guidance because some of them did not have access to school nurses. And we learned throughout discussions that school nurses played a very critical role in implementing our guidance, as well as educating staff, parents, and students on the current situation and giving them different updates about H1N1. We also learned that schools need information specific to routine cleaning, specifically how to properly use disinfectants and what disinfectants to use in a school setting. And we need to provide information on the relationship between routine cleaning as well as the transmission of flu. They also talked about the need for student-directed information that really focuses on teaching students how to prevent the spread of flu, things that they can do on a daily basis in terms of washing their hands, covering their coughs. And these materials need to be age-appropriate. These materials also need to illustrate our messages, for example, how to properly wash hands. And then lastly, administrators and nurses talked about needing communication materials that focus on addressing panic. This was a very big issue early on in the response, and they really struggled to do that. And so once we found out what the information needs were, we asked them, of course, how they wanted to receive this information. And many of them talked about their preferred communication sources. Again, CDC is a trusted source for information. And they wanted information to originate and be developed by the CDC, but they also wanted that information to be funneled through their preferred sources. For example, state and local public health departments, the U.S. Department of Education, and even some of those national organizations that were involved in our opinion leader calls. They also wanted to receive this communication in the form of an email or through listserv messages. They wanted to hear about information and updates in staff and parent meetings. They wanted it through printed materials, as well as web posting and information that could be available to them electronically. So, moving forward, as we develop communication materials for K through 12 schools and their audiences, some of the things that we need to consider is we need to make sure that we clearly define scientific terms and also provide audiences with setting-specific examples that they can easily implement and adapt in their environments. And we also need to provide them with an overall summary of the resources that are available to them and the purpose of those resources, as well as when and how best to use those resources. We also need to provide information that will inform school attendance policy change, the ongoing monitoring of student symptoms during the school day, and of course, pandemic planning and preparedness. And then lastly, we need to continue our efforts around educating people about why it's important for them to stay home when they are sick. And we know that this may require them, may require encouraging schools to build relationships or form partnerships with their local businesses so that during a pandemic, they can have increased collaborative efforts, especially when you're talking about parents not being able to have leave to come and pick their sick students up from school or even stay home with their students. So that is all that I have, and thank you so much for your time.